This morning, I'm going to talk about monitoring the outcomes of high-risk HPV or oncogenic HPV infection, and these include primarily anogenital cancers. And specifically, I'm going to discuss the system of cancer surveillance in the U.S., which is based on a national network of cancer registries. I'm going to focus my talk on the usefulness of these registries in their current role for monitoring HPV-related cancers, and I'm going to briefly discuss plans to expand that role to include monitoring for cervical cancer precursors, which are an earlier manifestation of oncogenic HPV infection. And I should say at the outset that I work in the Division of STD Prevention. The cancer registry programs are housed in the Division of Cancer. What is DCPC?
Division of Cancer Prevention and Control.
Yeah, Division of Cancer Prevention and Control. And through the work on this project, we've been collaborating a lot with the cancer folks. So here I've listed the HPV-related cancers, and there are approximately 20,000 cases per year reported to registries in the U.S. While most of them are anogenital cancers, there are a small number due to head and neck cancers. And it is important to note that of these not all cases are due to HPV. Cervical cancer contributes the largest number of cases, approximately 12 to 13,000 cases per year, all of which are due to HPV, oncogenic HPV. However, less than half of all vulvar, vaginal, and penile cancers are associated with HPV, and only about 10% of head and neck cancers are associated. So cancer registration has been around in the U.S. since the 1930s, and it is the fundamental method of cancer surveillance in the U.S. as well as other countries. Cancer cases are diagnosed by providers in hospital-based registries, but now that more cancers are being diagnosed in non-hospital settings, the registries have expanded to also register cases in non-hospital settings, which include physician offices, non-hospital-based path labs, radiation treatment centers, and surgery centers. And all cases are registered by certified tumor registrars, and they're reported to state-based central cancer registries, either through direct reporting or via regional registries. These data are then transmitted to the federal, to different federal agencies to compile a national database on cancer incidents. And they're combined with data on mortality from vital records to also give pictures of cancer-related mortality. Okay, so here I've just listed the types of data collected through cancer registries. The main data element is reporting of incident cases, and then there are also demographics on the patients which are collected, and then various other data pieces on the type of the cancer and the treatment. And as I mentioned, these data are combined with mortality records before they're transmitted to the federal agencies. These are the functions of cancer registries. So they are to measure the burden of cancer in a well-defined geographic area. It's typically a state, but as I'll show you later in the presentation, also includes other geographic areas. They also monitor cancer trends over time and determine cancer patterns in various populations. An example would be to look at racial disparities in different cancer types. They help to guide the planning and evaluation of cancer control and prevention programs. They guide priority setting for allocating health resources, and they advance the clinical, epidemiologic, and health services research around cancer in the United States. So cancer registration is supported mainly by three entities. Two are federal agencies, and one is an umbrella nonprofit agency. The federal agencies are responsible for funding and operating state-based registries and include NCI, the National Cancer Institute's SEER program, which stands for Surveillance, Epidemiology, and End Results program. It also includes the CDC's National Program of Cancer Registries, or NPCR. And both of these programs together have about a 100% population coverage in the U.S., and I'll show you more about that later on in the talk. NACER, or the North American Association of Central Cancer Registries, is the umbrella nonprofit organization, and It plays an active role in education and training of registry personnel, developing and maintaining uniform data standards across registries in both NPCR and SEER. It's also responsible for the certification of complete, timely, and accurate data, and also works to aggregate and publish the data. Okay, so this map shows the distribution of NPCR and SEER registries. So SEER was the first set of registries, and you can see here it's in white, and it includes states. What's the arrow there? So there are states as well as metropolitan areas which run SEER registries. In yellow, you see the, and SEER covers about 14% of the U.S. population. In yellow are the NPCR registries, which cover the rest of the U.S. And they, SEER was started in 1971, NPCR was started in 1992, and they've grown, and I think they reached 100% population coverage either last year or actually, I think it was last year. In orange, we have the registries which are funded jointly by NPCR and SEER. Okay. This is an example of some of the data collected through the registries. This table shows invasive cervical cancer cases in the U.S. from 2002 to 2004, both by count and by rate. And I showed this slide to demonstrate how these data help to show the disparities in cervical cancer across different rates, especially if you look at blacks and Hispanics, which have significantly higher rates than the other race ethnicity groups. Okay, so now I'm going to switch gears a little bit to talk about expanding the role of NPCR in HPV vaccine monitoring. So there is some previous background in collecting data on carcinoma in situ. Carcinoma in situ is the immediate precursor to invasive cervical cancer, and it's often abbreviated as CIS and is also collected through CIN3. And carcinoma in situ is detected through cervical screening programs, so through PAPs and then cervical biopsy. And it develops a lot earlier than cervical cancer, which can take decades to develop, decades after HPV infection, whereas carcinoma in situ is an earlier measure of infection. So the registries were collecting data on carcinoma in situ. However, in 1996, there was a decision to discontinue collection of these data based on concerns over new nomenclature around how Pap smears specifically were being coded by pathologists, and there was some concern about misclassification of cases. So the registries were advised to discontinue collection of this data. However, the Michigan Central Cancer Registry continued to collect the data over this time period. Okay, and here are some data from the Michigan Registry. And what this graph shows is these are rates of invasive cervical cancer, which are shown in red here, and rates of carcinoma in situ. And what you see here is that rates of invasive cancer have gone down over this time period, while rates of carcinoma in situ have gone up. And you can see here how these two pieces of data really complement each other. The increased number of carcinoma in situ cases suggests an increase in screening and detection of precancers, and when it's accompanied with decreasing rates of invasive cancer, it's suggestive of the success of screening programs in reducing cervical cancer cases. And you can imagine here that if in vaccine-related prevention of cancers, one would expect to see decreasing rates of carcinoma in situ as well as invasive cancer cases. So this really gives a nice picture of cervical cancer and what's happening to the rates and why. Okay, this is another graph from the Michigan Registry, and now it shows age-specific rates of carcinoma in situ. And most of the lines are down here, and these are primarily older age groups. I'm going to ignore this line here, which is women under the age of 20. This was a very small number, but I'm going to focus on these two groups. These are 20 to 29-year-olds, and these are 30 to 39-year-olds. What we see here is that rates have been going up. Rates of carcinoma in situ have been going up. And in 1990, Michigan Medicaid programs expanded their coverage to cover PAP screening in family planning clinics. And it was specifically to reach women in these age groups. And there were a number of other programs also to give access to underinsured or low-income young women to get their PAP tests. And what you see here, this increase in the number of carcinoma in situ cases was very helpful to the Michigan programs in supporting their efforts to continue funding for these programs. Okay, so so current directions right now, at CDC, we're currently looking at monitoring cervical cancer precursor data in NPCR. And we've targeted three registries, the Michigan, Louisiana, and Kentucky Central Cancer Registries, which all three are state-based and happen to be jointly funded by both NPCR and SEER. And we would like to leverage the infrastructure in place at these registries, meaning the utilization of their experienced tumor registrars, using data streams from pathology labs and other reporting sources, and using their data standards for completeness, accuracy, and timeliness. And what we'd like to do is we're working on a protocol right now to determine what data elements we'd like to cover and how we're going to collect these data. So we'd like to collect incidence data either on CIN23, CIN3, or carcinoma in situ itself through these registries. We would like to do additional data elements on demographics. And we would also like to explore the feasibility of utilizing some of the electronic data reporting that's already going on in some of these registries with their invasive cancer cases. In one of the registries in Michigan, we're also exploring linking the cancer registry data with data from immunization registries, which you're going to hear more about later in this session. And that would be very helpful because we could get vaccination history on these women. Okay. I want to just switch gears here and talk about another pilot project that's going on. I'm looking at HPV typing of cervical cancers. And the specific objective is to measure reduction in HPV 16 and 18 related invasive cancers. Those are the two types in the vaccines. And so we have approximately 12,000 cervical cancers reported per year in NPCR. And we'd like to take a sample of them from four state-based central cancer registries, the three that I mentioned, and the addition of the Florida registry. And the project is going to collect pathology specimens from a sample of these cancer cases to be sent to CDC for HPV typing. And we'd like to collect some baseline data and then follow this over time. So those are the activities, and I'd like to acknowledge the following people in helping me to prepare this presentation, especially Glenn Copeland at the Michigan Central Cancer Registry. And that's it.
We have time for a couple questions about this presentation.
Okay, so the question is about managing abnormal PAP tests and HPV tests. Well, the current recommendations are to, they vary across different groups, but currently the recommendation is different for women over 30 and under 30. So for women under 30, you're talking about ASCUS PAP tests specifically? Okay, so the result you're talking about is having an ASCUS PAP test and a positive HPV test? Okay, so there are a number of options, and I think that it varies on which one, I think different programs take different approaches, but the recommendation currently is for the recommendation is currently you can refer them for colposcopy at that time, or you can repeat the test, both tests in 12 months. And I think there are variations in what programs do what.